I'm sure some of you came on this morning and to church, depending on your church experience in the past. Maybe you're expecting to see like flowers being handed out to all the women, or a big Mother's Day brunch afterwards. Or maybe you're coming in going, oh gosh, I hope that they're not going to make a big deal out of this and I can just kind of sneak in. So let's be honest. Let's just name it. Mother's Day can be really complicated. It can be lots of highs, lots of lows. Some of you are celebrating your moms. Some of you are celebrating being moms. Some of you have moms. Some of you are mourning the loss of a mom. Some of you are being reminded of the hard relationship that you have with your mom. Maybe you haven't spoken in a while. This day just kind of pokes at that wound a little bit. So before we go any further, I just want to hold some space. Just want to say that you are welcome here. All of you. The joyful parts, the grieving parts, the angry parts, the silly parts. This is a church where we just want to do our best as regular people to follow Jesus. And Jesus holds room for all of this, which means we hold room for all of this. So there is room for you, no matter what you're experiencing this morning. So right now we are in the middle of our Miracles Jesus Did series. We're examining the miracles, the signs that Jesus did during his ministry here on earth. And each of these, we call them a sign because it reveals something about who God is, his heart for us. It gives us a picture and a vision of how we might live as we follow his example and live like Jesus. So today, you get a twofer. We're going to look at two different miracles this morning. If you get the newsletter and read the little title, I decided to just call this morning's one Daughters. We're going to look at a place where Jesus intentionally reaches out to two women in a profound, compassionate, and empowering way. And if you're sitting here thinking, oh good, I'm a man, you know, this doesn't apply to me. That was my best man voice. I'm sorry. That's all you're getting. Maybe I can take a nap now. What I'd encourage you is that you stay engaged. Use this as an opportunity to understand and empathize with a perspective that might be outside of your own. And I think this is also going to touch on some pretty deep, shared, intrinsic experiences. So this morning, this message is for anyone who has ever waited on God longer than you thought you would have to. For anyone that felt like maybe you weren't enough. Anyone that's been interrupted when you're already feeling so overwhelmed. For anyone who wished Jesus would just notice them too. Is that anyone in this room? Any of those apply? Well, you're in the right place. Another quick pull of the room. Does anyone here love being interrupted? Anyone? No? What? Really? Oh, I'm shocked. Oh, my earrings are still on. I would love for you to picture and think about the last time that you were trying to get something really important done. Maybe, you know, working on an important work project or something around the house. This is your only chance to focus. And someone stops you with something that just feels so not important. It's like a weird question or a story, and you're like, what the heck? I think about this when I worked at a coffee shop, and we're watching the cars pile up behind in line, and somebody is like asking question after question after question. What is the almond milk made out of? Almonds? You know, does it contain nuts? Yes, it absolutely does. What's in this? Well, if you look at our menu, you'll see that it's got, white chocolate and caramel in it. What size is a small? It is 12 ounces. It looks like this. So do you want a 12-ounce blah, blah, blah? What's in this? And you're like doing your best to give them the best experience, but you're also watching all these cars pile up. And you're like, oh my gosh, I'm trying to do something important. Come on, get it together. So I'd love for you to hold that moment, that place of being interrupted when you're trying to get something done. Because that's where we're going to go to in Scripture today. If you are a physical Bible person, you want to follow along, open it up in your phone, we're going to be hanging out in Mark chapter 5. So Jesus, the journey so far, has been healing people, calming storms. He's building this reputation, right? And as he gets off a boat, a man named Jairus, a synagogue leader, runs up to him and falls at his feet. Now, Jairus isn't the kind of guy who just goes falling at people's feet. He's respected, religious, powerful. But something's going on. His 12-year-old daughter is dying. And all that status, all of that power doesn't mean a thing when your kid is dying. So Jairus pleads with Jesus. We see this in verse 23. He asked him urgently, "My little daughter is near death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be healed and live." And Jesus went with him, and a large crowd followed and pressed around him. He's begging Jesus, "Save my little girl." And Jesus goes with him. So where do we expect the story to go? Jesus is going to go to the little girl. He's going to heal her. We're going to see a miracle, right? That's where we expect the story to go. That's what should happen. But this story gets interrupted, and we see the telling of a different story. Because Jesus gets interrupted by someone who wasn't invited, someone who wasn't supposed to be there, someone that's desperate. We meet a woman. We don't get her name, but she has been bleeding for 12 years. Say that again. 12 years. Now, I don't want to get too graphic, but let's just say that is a very long time to be hemorrhaging. I think about 50% of the room right here knows how awful that would be. And the other 50%, I encourage you to just take our word for it. It's not great. Verse 26. So not only is she in physical pain, but she had endured a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet instead of growing better, she grew worse. Can you imagine how exhausting that would be? Every doctor's visit, every remedy, every time they promise something that's going to work this time, but it doesn't. She has spent all of her money, and yet she's somehow worse off. And she wasn't just suffering physically and financially, but according to Jewish law, and you can find this in Leviticus 15, which I know is everyone's favorite quiet time devotional book to read in the morning, right? Because of her bleeding, this woman was considered ceremonially unclean. So this meant that she couldn't touch anyone. No one could touch her. If they touched her, they were considered unclean until they washed their clothes, bathed, and then evening comes. Can you imagine being untouchable? Going without human contact for 12 years. It's not like she just has to avoid skin contact with people. anything she touches becomes unclean. Every bed, every chair that she sits on is defiled. Because she was ceremonially unclean, she couldn't go to the temple. Remember, the tabernacle and later the temple is a place where God dwells among his people. When humans enter this earthly temple, they're experiencing this really cool overlap of the kingdom of heaven here on earth. Those two spaces at once. But Leviticus explains why she cannot enter the temple. It says, "Thus you are the Israelites, set apart from their impurity, so that they do not die in their impurity by defiling my tabernacle, which is in their midst." But this meant she couldn't go to the temple for 12 years. Her access to God in this way was cut off for 12 years. All of this, no human contact, living separately, unable to attend the temple and worship her God in the way that she knew for 12 years. And then here comes Jesus. I wonder if she's like heard the stories of him, the healing that he's done. And she thinks, if I can just barely touch him, if I can just barely get there, that will be enough. If I could just reach the hem of his cloak, maybe I'll be healed. But remember what we just talked about. This is a dangerous move. The fact that she's in this crowd that's pressing in on Jesus, she's bumping into people, reaching through arms and robes to get to Jesus. It's kind of a scandal. Because by the letter of the law, she's contaminating everyone she's touching by doing this. She's risking contaminating Jesus. But after 12 years of shame, isolation, trying everything else, she is desperate. Marshall talked a bit on being desperate last week, so if you want to listen to that, it's a great, great message. But I wonder if you've ever felt like that. Like you're just barely hanging on. Maybe you feel like, I don't even know how to pray anymore. I've used every single combination of words to try and get God to answer this prayer. And so it just kind of comes out as a sigh. Don't know what else to say. Don't know how else to engage with it. Or maybe you don't engage with it. Maybe you try and stay distracted. Social media, right? Turning to that. Hey, maybe that'll give me a quick distraction. Maybe that'll hit different. But she pushes through. She elbows her way through the crowd. Or maybe she, you know, heard ahead of time and found a spot on the side. But either way, she touches his cloak. Something interesting happens. Jesus feels the power leave him, and he stops. In a crowd pressing in all around him, he asks, "Who touched me?" I love to think about like the disciples' reaction here. Like, everyone, Jesus? Like, you're in a crowd? I don't know what you're expecting. It's like, you know, you're standing in some rain and it's like, what just got me wet? And it's like, I don't know, like, let's use our context clues here. But Jesus says, "No, power went out from me. Someone touched me with faith." He knows that something happened. He knows that someone just experienced healing presence of God. And the woman knows. She knows he's asking, "Who touched me?" And she can no longer hide. I imagine being in her position, I would be terrified. And so she comes before him. She falls at his feet, and she tells him the whole truth. The that she risked everything to touch him. And then Jesus says something interesting. In verse 34, he says to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." And in Matthew, he says, "Have courage, daughter, your faith has made you well." Do you guys catch something interesting, the interesting thing there? He calls her daughter. It's the only time in the Gospels where Jesus calls somebody daughter. Let's just sit on that for a second. This woman who hasn't been touched in over a decade, who hasn't belonged in years, who is defined by her condition, he doesn't just heal her body, which he does, heals her body, but he restores her identity. He welcomes her back into a community. He says, "You are not unclean. You are not a problem. You're not forgotten." She went from outcast to, what's a daughter? Family. "You are my daughter." It's this incredible, powerful moment. Now, if I'm Jairus, I'm having a panic attack, right? Because, it's great you care for this daughter, but my daughter is dying. Did we forget about this? Like, we're on our way to her. And then the worst thing happens. The information that no parent wants to hear. Somebody comes and tells him, "Your daughter is dead. Don't bother the teacher anymore. It's too late." Oof. I'm going to invite the band back up. No, I'm just kidding. So if you're Jairus, what are you feeling in this moment? You were first in line. You begged Jesus. He said yes, but then he got delayed. Got delayed for someone else. And just not just someone else, but someone that's unclean. Someone that's not important. And now your daughter is gone. How does that make any sense? Some of you may know what that moment feels like. You've prayed, you've hoped, you've begged, and it still fell apart. But Jesus turns to Jairus, and he says, "Don't be afraid, just believe." Like, ooh, goosebumps. And so they arrive at the house, and everyone is weeping. It's over. But Jesus says, "She's not dead, just asleep." And they laugh at him. They laugh at Jesus because they're like, "Nah, Jesus, I don't know. She's not just asleep. We know what dead looks like. And she's dead. She's gone. This is it. It's over." But he sends away the crowds, only allowing Peter, James, John, the brother of James, the girl's mother and father, to go with him into her room. Verse 41. Then, gently taking the child by the hand, he said to her, this thing that means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." The girl got up at once and began to walk around. She was 12 years old. They were completely astonished at this. He strictly ordered that no one should know about this and told them to give her something to eat. Again, something interesting happens here. Because if we look at the letter of the law, the standard of the law, Jesus is yet again interacting with someone unclean. He touched a dead body, which is considered unclean. But he tells her to get up. And she does. She rises. Breath returns. Life wins. And then Jesus says, get this girl a burger. Okay, like, get her some food. Being dead is probably pretty hard on the body. Let's get her something to eat. So these miracles, the healing, the raising of Jairus' daughter, and the woman with the issue of blood, they're mentioned in three Gospels. And each time they use a sandwich-like telling. So you see the story of Jairus, then we see the woman with the issue of blood, and then they go back to the story of Jairus. It's this kind of interconnected sandwich telling. And something's happening here. There's maybe a connection between these two stories. They're similar. They're connected in several ways. Did you guys catch any of them? The woman had been suffering for 12 years. The girl is 12 years old. 12 years of suffering, 12 years of life, 12 years of isolation, 12 years of time with family. We also see that there are two daughters. The daughter of Jairus and the woman whom Jesus calls daughter. Both of them are considered unclean. One due to bleeding, one due to, well, being dead. One touches Jesus. One is touched by Jesus. But both are seen, healed. Both are restored. Really cool connections going on. So again, in this series, we're examining the miracles of Jesus. We're trying to learn more about who God is, what his heart is for us, and how we might also do what we see the Father is doing. So what does this passage, what do these stories tell us about who God is? I think one thing we can take away from this is that we see God is a compassionate God that wants to be restored with his people. He wants to live among his people. He dwelled with Adam and Eve long ago in the garden, right? He walked with them. When sin corrupted this original design, he creates this new way for him to dwell among his people. He creates a tabernacle and then the temple where his presence dwells and people can come and be with him. He wants to be among his people. But that was limited. So he didn't stop there, but came as flesh and dwelt among all people as Jesus. In John 1:14, we see, now the word became flesh and took up residence, or literally, and tabernacled among us. So what John is claiming right here is that Jesus is a temple. He is now the place where heaven and earth overlap. And so instead of people needing to come to this physical place where heaven and earth are overlapping, Jesus starts bringing heaven everywhere he goes, bringing little pockets of heaven with every miracle, with every move of God. And we see this in these miracles. Instead of Jesus being made unclean, which again, that's how the law has worked so far, we see that the contamination of this world just has no effect on him. The daughters did not make Jesus, God's tabernacle, dwelling place, unclean. Instead, his power is so great that he makes them clean. And now, through the death and resurrection of Jesus, when we receive the Holy Spirit, we become little dwelling places of God. And now we get to go around participating with the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven here and now. God cares. He wants to be restored to his people. And we're invited into that. What does this tell us about God's heart for us? Again, just one idea, one takeaway. We see that just as a chronic illness, if anyone's dealt with a chronic illness, you know that it's not just physical, but it affects us physically, mentally, and spiritually. And just as we must be healed physically, we also need to be healed mentally, spiritually as well. This is a complete or whole healing. I can't help but like have this part where Jesus asks, "Who touched me?" stand out. She got healed. In fact, in the raising of Jairus' daughter, he tells them, "Don't tell anyone." So why does he point this one out? Why does he stop everything and say, "Who touched me?" I wonder if it's because God saw that this woman was still cowering, still in some ways trying to hide. She had emotional wounds that only God could see. Feelings of shame, fear, and anxiety that hadn't been transformed yet. Yes, she's physically healed, but sometimes it takes a while for our brain and our heart to catch up, and we're still clinging on to this old identity. But God loved her so much that he couldn't let her walk away with these emotional wounds unmet and still festering. So Jesus immediately responds. He stops everything. He turns around to her and he calls her daughter. He attends to that emotional, spiritual need as well. How does this tell us about how we can participate with what God is doing? Just a couple practical notes as we, you know, partner with the Holy Spirit. What are some kind of tools we can put in our toolbox? One thing I noticed is in one story, she reaches out and she touches Jesus. And in the other story, Jesus goes and he touches the daughter. One touches, one is touched, right? I think sometimes we're in that space of like desperately going after God. And we've talked again before about how important that desperation, that part of faith is to the experience of miracles. But we also see Jairus praying on behalf of his daughter, interceding. We don't want to limit God, because sometimes he can come and he's the one that reaches out and touches and blows all of our expectations out of the water. After each of these healings, he gives some sort of instruction or guide to the woman. He says, "Go in peace," right? Tending to that emotional, spiritual part. For the young daughter, he says, "Get her something to eat." But either way, there's some sort of follow-up that's happening. And in the 5-step prayer model that we have in the Vineyard, that's part of it. We don't want to just say, "Okay, you're healed. Have fun," you know? We give people some sort of follow-up, some sort of means of continuing to encounter God, draw closer to him, keep that healing. It's important that we give people a follow-up. Reach out to them afterwards. "Hey, how's that going? How are you feeling?" Love that he also sends people out of the room when he heals his daughter. You know, sometimes encountering God's presence, being healed,
can be kind of weird. You know, sometimes there's snot bubbles. Sometimes it's like some pretty big emotional things happening. We don't need to make it weirder. We don't have to make a big show of it. We don't have to make this performative. That's not what it's about, right? Sometimes we need those quiet moments. And I think maybe the most important thing is love above all else. If we're gonna engage in healing, if we're gonna be asking God for miracles, we can't lose sight of how important it is to love the person in front of us really well. Sometimes healing doesn't exactly look the way we think or hope it might. Sometimes healing looks like acceptance, belonging, connection. Sometimes healing looks like not letting a fear have a hold in your life. Love looks like a touch from a friend or a loved one in a moment of shame, hopelessness, or deep pain that draws us out and reminds us that we are loved and that we are children of God. I am actually going to have the band come back up now. So on this Mother's Day, maybe some of you feel like Jairus right now. You're pleading for someone you love. Maybe you feel like the woman, ashamed, unnamed, so tired of waiting. Maybe you are a mother. Maybe you long to be one. Maybe you've lost. Maybe you're full of joy. Here's the good news, is that no matter where you are, no matter what you're feeling, what your experience is, Jesus sees you. He's going to stop for you. Jesus calls you daughter. And again, daughter isn't just a sentimental word in this case. It's a healing word. It's a word of welcome. It's a word of identity. Jesus isn't in a rush. He's not constrained by urgency or social rules. He's not too important for the overlooked. And he's not too late for the hopeless. So here's what I'd like to invite you into today. If you feel overlooked, Jesus stops for you. If you feel unclean, Jesus touches and cleanses you. If you feel it's too late, Jesus is still coming. If you feel unknown and unloved, you are his daughter. Some of you need to hear that word daughter, not just in your mind, not just through your ears, but in your soul. You are a daughter of God, not because you earned it, not because you got it all right, but because he named you. And for others of us, maybe we're being invited to see like Jesus, to name the daughters around us, to call out the value in people who have been overlooked, to be the kind of church that doesn't rush past people's pain. So let me ask, where do you feel forgotten? Where do you feel like your need isn't urgent enough, or spiritual enough, worthy enough? Have you convinced yourself that Jesus is too busy for you? Maybe he's focused on the real emergencies. People with stronger faith, better prayer lives, less messy stories.
So let's take a breath together. Let us today let God speak a new name over you. Not your failure, not your diagnosis, not whatever label has been put on you. Just hear God as he calls you daughter. Mine.